using shrubs and using vinegars and stuff like that is a big part of bringing some of the inherent complexities of alcohol to the NA space. Saline, acids, acidicness, tannins, like these are all things that we're using to, like I said, we're not mimicking, but to bring some of that experience that people used to know or like but don't want the headache from.
Hello and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat or drink, in the case of recent episodes. I am your co-host Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com, and I'm joined as always by Lori Frederick. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm doing great. All is good in my head at this point.
That's good. I'm great. I'm eating lunch. I'm having a delicious homemade mac and cheese, which inspired some controversial takes pre-podcast with our guest. I'm going to invite our guest to speak up now because she was of the opinion, not a takeout mac and cheese situation.
Yeah. No, well, and I'll introduce her quickly first, but then we can totally commence on the...
We needed to spend at least a tight 20 on marriage.
But we're here today with Zoe Lorenzo, and she is of the Counter Day Bar, which is a relatively new bar located in Crossroads Collective, which serves not what you might expect from a bar, but typically zero proof options.
Not mac
and we're going to let her talk all about that. No, they do not have mac and cheese.
Because your take was,
cheese at Crossroads, I believe. So.
You can. And other places. I think they have mac and cheese at Izzy Hops across the way, which I've actually enjoyed their mac and cheese.
A plethora of places to get mac and cheese around Milwaukee.
I'm sure, yes.
But not you, because you are anti-order out mac and cheese.
It's just, a lot simpler to make at home, you know. It's like they keep coming up with all of these new toppings for mac and cheese to try to make it worth $15, right? Like, now they're like crushing up some bacon or like, adding some barbecue, some kimchi. It's like...
They're trying to trick you into thinking you couldn't make mac and cheese by yourself.
Well, that's another interesting thing. Like, you know, you can have baked mac and cheese with breadcrumbs or whatnot, and that's still mac and cheese. But I feel like at some point, it just becomes a cheesy casserole. Like, when you start adding...
It just becomes a hot thing.
Like, at some point, it's not mac and cheese anymore. It's like...
Two mac and cheese camps, casserole and judged up Alfredo.
They should
rebrand. They should be like, oh no, we're not mac and cheese. I wonder if the Alfredo community was like,
the Italian
stop including us. Right, like they're like, we are not mac.
Well, the Italian community, maybe the Italian American community, but Alfredo is not in the canon.
Mac and cheese is like the awkward uncle to Alfredo. Alfredo's just like, do we have to invite mac and cheese to the
more
party?
Like the annoying young cousin or nephew or something.
Yeah,
like pulling at Alfredo's leg.
Like in the box room, and you go from mac and cheese and you start adding a bunch of stuff to it, and then it just becomes Hamburger Helper.
And that's nothing wrong with Hamburger Helper, I will tell you. Ain't nothing wrong with it.
Easy enough to make by yourself.
I know so few recipes at home. Why would I go to a restaurant to order something that I can... That is one of those few recipes.
Honestly.
And my thing with, and most of the time mac and cheese falls in this category, although I did put in my pitch for Honey Pie or Comet, whose mac and cheese I think is worth eating out. But grilled cheese sandwiches are also my thing. I will never order at a restaurant because...
I think that's fair. You know what mine is, weirdly enough, is steak.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if that's a controversial opinion. I recently had an experience at a steakhouse that I will not name, and it was good. It was a fine steak. It was a tasty steak, but at the end of the day, it was a $70 steak. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could get good meat from the grocery store, like not like to the level of, you know, the place we went, but like I could get a pretty solid cut of meat and cook it at home to a degree, like, you know, that for, you know, at the end of the day, like half the price. Yeah. Like I do think
instead of a $70 steak done medium, fine.
Yeah, it just seems so expensive for something that I can't make it as good, but I can make something, you know, approximate.
Yeah.
I felt this way
for a really, really long time. And then as I had to eat more steak out and in restaurants, I did realize that, well, number one, behind the scenes, you can't, if you go to a proper steakhouse that actually sources well, yeah, I can't buy the steak.
Yeah, you're paying for the quality of the meat.
So there is that. I also, like, if they're using like an infrared broiler, there's no way I can get that crust.
The crust
on my steak, no matter what I do at a home kitchen. So I'm of two minds. Like, if you can cook a great steak at your house, I think it becomes harder to eat a $70 steak, like, weekly. But, you know, but
weekly, as a
special... Well, I'm just saying, like, there are people...
you know, there are people steak, my, who my, out for steak. My weekly $70 steak.
Yep. There are people who literally are regular at
that
steak place.
I am not Scrooge McDuck here.
But I'm saying there's a time and place for going out for a really, really good steak.
And it's once a decade.
So, but there are people who really only go to restaurants to eat steak, and they go once a week, right? I mean,
yeah, I guess I'm the weirdo that way. But you know, fair enough. I'm also the spaghetti-o aficionado of the podcast, so maybe my food takes should be
fair.
Taken.
That's
with the
fair with
salt.
The mini hot dogs.
Oh, see, I'm not a Frank's person though. I'm a shapes plain.
I have to tell you guys the truth. This whole time, I am vegan, so my opinion is my opinion.
Well, no wonder you don't order the mac and cheese then to go.
Well, there's some good vegan mac out there too. Anyway,
that is
We can
Strange Town. Shout out Strange Town. Love your vegan queso. Very tasty. Well, thank you for joining us. We should probably stop talking about my random my random food discourse. And let's talk about you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your awesome new Crossroads Collective bar/ installation isn't the right word.
Kind of give us the lowdown. Give us the summary. Because I did a not stellar job. And explaining the counter day bar.
Well, first of all,
I think there's a fancier way.
I'm really excited to be here. We've been working on this project for about 2.5 months now and open for a little over a month and a half. We're coming up on 2 months. So it's just been really fun. It's me and Ryan Castellas, who's the owner and operator of Discourse Coffee, if everyone knows that.
Yeah. So and I if feel you like- know that, you'll kind of know the caliber of drink that we're talking about.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We serve non-alcoholic cocktails, and these aren't your ginger beer, cranberry juice, and lime. This is a 10, 12-step cocktails with hours of prep into each one.
Shirley Temples need not apply.
Inevitably, there will be a a cocktail that, you know, reckons or like that draws you back to that Shirley Temple cocktail.
Yeah.
We need to make like the sophisticates Shirley Temple. Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, we are working on our menu right now is myths and fables. So it's all Greco-Roman myths and Aesop's fables.
Oh, cool.
We've got this really cool storybook menu designed by Olivia Moulter. Yeah, so, sorry.
Oh, no.
So, and
I got bored by it.
The day bar is an experience altogether.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
So that's what you can get. We have 4 seats at our counter because we are in the food hall. So we try to kind of transport you out of the food hall and into our own space through our conversations and our expertise about NA and about cocktails. Having a reservation and sitting at one of our seats gives you like the privilege to get to know like about our process and what we're doing. And I'll often sneak a little sample of something we're working on in there. Right now we've been, aside from our Myths and Fables menu, developing some new classic cocktails that we can serve at like a little bit of a lower price point. Cause like I said, these are like really complex cocktails with syrups and juices and teas and acid blends.
Tinctures. All of the things that, yeah.
So
yeah.
We're working on some simpler builds, you know, more like 3 or 4 ingredients, not inclusive of tinctures or bitters. That we can serve for the regular hall.
And to be clear, so someone could show up at the food hall, order a drink off the menu.
Yeah.
Then have it sent to their table.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or they can reserve a space at the bar and actually kind of get a tasting menu.
Yeah, get a tasting menu and an experience. Our tasting menus are 3, 5, and 7 courses. They are full-size drinks, so I'd say the best way to come and give us a try and experience our menu is just coming with a friend or a loved one and doing the 7-course menu split between you. We offer a food item with that, a really good mushroom pate or a lemon curd mousse made by our discourse chef and pastry chef. And finish with some house candied fennel and start with that crème, which is a cocoa butter encapsulation that's served at discourse as well as our location. Independent flavors at each. So, or you can
order them. So you will have a different Kren, a spherical,
yes,
pop in your mouth.
Yes.
Sort of Kren experience at the coffee shop versus at the day bar.
Yeah. So we have one that's a Days of Heaven tea. So it's lemon, verbena, rhubarb, and chamomile. And then there's some house fennel tonka syrup, some of that candied fennel that I make and leave with you at the end of the tasting menu with elderflower and coriander. And some yuzu kosho, which is that salted yuzu with a little bit of heat on it, and some mango tangerine powder. So it's just an explosion of flavor to start off the tasting menu, and that's something exclusive to the menus. And you can, if you're looking for a one-off, then yeah, head on to Discourse on 1020 North Broadway and pick one up there with your coffee. But
yeah.
Wow. I feel like I just heard a bunch of great words for our spelling bee as well. Just a lot of words. My brain had to go through the Rolodex of vocabulary and be like, ooh, interesting. Just a lot of really interesting flavors and unique stuff going on there. How do you kind of, what's kind of the thought process behind, you know, planning out? Because this sounds really complex and complicated, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of intimidating for some people.
Well, we were talking about it at the beginning of this being like, you know, the mocktail kind of I think it's kind of worn off a little bit now, but kind of had that reputation of like, you know, the Shirley Temple and the ginger beer and stuff. And this sounds so much more thought out, complex, complicated, especially with the pairings and the kind of, you know, these kind of so many elements working in harmony. How does that whole process come together?
Yeah, so our goal isn't to create good mocktails. It's to be one of the best cocktail bars in the city. We like I said, we do a ton of prep work and work to combine these flavors. There's so many flavor elements in each drink that when you look at our menu and it's a list of ingredients, people are like, like you just said, I don't know what this means. Sounds really good. I don't know what it means. So, yeah, I'm always there
But that's due in. I don't mean to interrupt, but I think that's due in part to the fact that to bring complexity and interest, you know, I mean, I think discourse tends to play around a great deal with flavors and put unexpected things together. But in the case of this, you know, when you're dealing with a drink that is going to measure up to a cocktail,
yeah,
right? A typical cocktail. It's got to be complex and interesting, you know. And in a cocktail, so much relies upon spirits.
Exactly. So
So when you take those out of the equation, you have to start at a different place.
Exactly. And with coffee or with alcoholic cocktails or spirits, you're relying on this strong base note, this strong flavor, like espresso or like, you know, whiskey. And we just don't have that to work with. Even our house-made liquors through rotary evaporation, where we start with a liquor and then denote that to its base flavors and rehydrate it once the ethanol is removed. Those still are a lot more malleable in taste and texture and are easily corrupted by other flavor elements. So that's why we end up with such a long list of ingredients, because we're building layer by layer instead of starting with, you know, a massive block of flavor that then you just add, you know, a little bit of things to amplify those existing flavors. Each flavor we have to compile. So
yeah. So it's definitely a complex and creative undertaking.
I do want to ask the question, what is your feeling about the word mocktail? We've talked to some people who are not, who don't like that word, who hate that word.
Yeah. Ryan hates mocktail. I don't like it because it's making it in the name. It's saying that this is a fake version of something else, but to me,
that it's an imitation.
Right, and that's exactly what I'm not trying to do. You know, I don't serve any fake whiskey sours or fake, like, you know what I mean? Like, everything, yeah. All of our cocktails aren't trying to mimic or be anything adjacent or like anything else. Yeah.
You're not serving a non-alcoholic old fashioned or right, non-alcoholic exactly. Giblet. This is a drink unto itself.
Right. And these are, it's a flavor experience that you wouldn't get anywhere else or in any other drink. They're completely unique. And so they are non-alcoholic cocktails of themselves and not relying on any other background that we're copying.
Yes. Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, and in some ways, I mean, this is taking kind of the craft cocktail concept and applying it to something that doesn't start out with the alcohol. And I think you will see this to some extent at bars where there are mixologists who really, really care.
Totally.
You know, as much about kind of the NA faction as the you know, the alcohol drinkers in the room. But the counter day bar is different in that you really, this is all you do.
Right. This is our main focus.
And I don't say all in a, in a small
that's
way.
It, that's
I mean,
it.
This is really the focus, you know, and the focus is to create a drink that everybody, regardless of where they are, you know, whether they normally drink, whether they normally don't drink alcohol.
Right.
They just create a drink that's worthy of all of those situations, right, where you're not missing something either way.
Right.
Am I wrong?
No, totally, yeah. So I have a lot of people who sit at our counter talk about how this experience makes them feel included. So that's what we're really trying to promote, is an inclusivity in nightlife spaces for our friends who don't drink, which is a much larger portion of the city and especially youth population than you imagine.
It's huge. It's definitely, yeah.
Yeah. I always hear
the number of people in the in between who don't drink a ton, you know, and who really kind of straddle that, oh, I totally drink, oh, I don't drink, adds a ton to that too. You know what I mean? I think it would be impressive to actually look at the statistics, because I think you find that, you know, less people drink, even in Wisconsin, than you would think.
Yeah, people always say, like, how would this succeed in, like, Brew City and, you know, these places with, you know, large amounts of alcohol consumption. And I think that it's almost easier for it to succeed here because we're the only option. There's, like, Intoxicated in Racine, but in terms of, like, this level of cocktail bar-ness, it's basically just us. It's basically just us in all of Wisconsin. and possibly the Midwest. I haven't heard of anywhere else. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. And your past experience is in a traditional, what we'll call a traditional bar setting.
Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about this, but really, like, looking upon this, how does it change things to work in this environment? You know, and has it kind of changed your perspective at all?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a totally different environment. Yeah, it's like where to start. Like, the consumer base is totally different. The, like, air and like, level of, like, tension or, like, just, like, the feeling is really different in doing it. And in terms of building it and making it, it's just, like, an array of possibility that, like, we don't really have the time to deal with as bartenders in a traditional setting.
And do you, I don't know, like when you kind of say that, like, there's no time to do this in a traditional bar setting. Are we talking like quarter bar, or are we talking like,
I mean more in cocktail bars because, but I mean dive bars as well. I started in dive bar and, I mean, the volume doesn't even allow you to make any kind of cocktail, so.
Right. Yeah. But I was going to say, I think there's probably cocktail bars that aspire to the complexity and who are making so much of what's on their plate beyond the alcohol that might give competition to the kind of complexity.
Oh, totally. We have a lot of really good cocktail bars around the city, you know, like Lost Wheel and Bryant's, and there's a lot of good places. I'm not snubbing them at all.
Yeah. Oh no. And I was just, but I'm kind of trying to think if there's anything, and that would be, I guess, the closest comparison would be, you know, kind of one of the higher end cocktail bars. Here, maybe, you know, maybe Mouser's Fault, maybe, you know, I'm so blanking. I mean, definitely Lost Whale, and spots like that. But they also, you know, Lost Whale also has to deal with like huge volume.
Yeah, people. Totally.
I think Mouser's Fault is probably a closer, comparison because you're talking about like a 6 or 8 seat, you know, speakeasy style. Cocktail bar.
Yeah. You know, and that, right, it, when you talk about speakeasies too, like the intimate setting and like having a lower volume really allows you to be more in depth, like I said, with not only with like the consumer and like socializing with the customer, but also like finding likes and dislikes. You know, we would really like to offer like a bespoke menu where like you can tell me, you know, oh, I want something drier and greener or something like that. Like we offer a lot of complexities in our current menu. There's like not really a drink that's like anything else, so I can point you to one of those with those descriptions, but I'd really like to be able to understand my back bar enough that I can make something off the cuff.
That's awesome.
And so that's probably a work in progress.
Totally. Yeah,
because like you said, I mean, like, this is, it's taking lots of,
yeah, and there's so many, there's tons of really good products out there, and I've only tried a very small percentage of them. And it's harder too because these products don't really, a lot of them don't really wholesale. So like we're buying bottles at like $30 a bottle. So it's hard because I can't just select, you know, it's twice the price of anything you would select in terms of alcohol to play with. So,
yeah. And so, yeah, it's a way. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, what products or what kind of ingredients are you most excited about using right now in these cocktails and these NA cocktails?
Super loving Aplos right now. They have an Arise and a Calm, and they're have hemp fortification. So that's something too, is like a lot of people are looking for like adaptogenics and like stuff like that, like mood altering health substances, basically, like chaga
and adaptogens. I was gonna say mushrooms.
Everyone's very into that right now, and that's something we talked about, like capitalizing on in the beginning of the in discussions of the concept, but we haven't really added that to our portfolio really. But yeah, so Arise and Calm are fortified with hemp, and they're really, really good. So like citrus is really hard to use in larger quantities. Like normally, like if I'm building a cocktail bespoke in with liquor, then I'm guessing I'm starting at like 0.75, like a 3/4 ounce to start like where I would taste with citrus. But you can't really do that with these NA cocktails. You have to start much, much slower because it really takes over the profile, not in acidity, but in flavor. So using Aplos is really cool because they have citric acid as their preservative, which a lot of these NA liqueurs do, because they're, you know, mostly tea and juice based. So they're usually more acetic or acidic. So using them in place of citrus is really cool because they have like super complex profiles. Like Calm is basil and shiso, and then Arise is like dandelion root and lemon verbena and an array of other flavors that I haven't memorized.
Oh, that's really interesting. It's cool. It feels a little bit like, you know, when we interview places that do like vegan foods and stuff like that, you learn about these kind of like alternatives to meats and like these kind of new things that are kind of, I mean, we also talked about shrubs just a few weeks ago and how those are having this big comeback now.
Totally.
In terms of, you know, bringing a kind of, texture isn't the right word, but kind of bringing a alcohol, you know, spirit flavor profile to things that don't have an alcohol or spirit in them. It's really interesting to kind of crack open these kind of new kind of side paths that haven't really been embraced much in like restaurants and in the mainstream.
Yeah, and using shrubs and using vinegars and stuff like that is a big part of bringing some of the inherent complexities of alcohol to the NA space. Saline, acids, aceticness, tannins, like these are all things that we're using to, like I said, we're not mimicking, but to bring some of that experience that people used to know or like, but don't want the headache from.
Right. Well, and they often talk about, you know, even the folks who are creating, you know, NA liqueurs or NA spirits. And I think that category is growing, but I'm not sure they've completely figured it out yet. You know, I think the issue with a lot of those products is that they're very, very subtle.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And you start mixing them with other things that you might traditionally think of and you lose all the flavors.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. they're just, and it's not that they're diluted. It's just that the processes by which they come around to that mean that it's not, you know, it's not quite the same. You know, and for instance, you know, you might be successful with something that's like a gin-like quality, because you can, you know, infuse lots of botanicals into something.
Right.
But what you're going to be missing is that bite. You know, if you're trying to replicate what place that had in a cocktail, you know, like there's no bite.
Right. Exactly. In our house liquors, like I was talking about, we use a fennel Fresno tincture to add a little bit of heat. And we use Disco Inferno by Bitter Cube in a lot of our cocktails, just a few drops to add just a little bit of that heat on the back end and in the finish.
Yeah. And Disco Inferno is basically it's kind of used like bitters. It's just like a capsaicin pop.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
But in terms of like talking about how those flavors dilute for those mimicking products, like we use Liars a lot, and those are all like one-to-one, like they're a gin and a spiced cane is their spiced rum, and you know, American Malt is their bourbon. But yeah, drinking those on their own or expecting them to do what alcohol does, you're not going to get that experience. They're water-based. They don't have that feeling. And if they do, if they do have a bite, and if these, like any liquors, are fortified with a bite, it sometimes feels artificial, like almost like if you over black peppered your mac and cheese, right? So,
right. Well, it's in some ways, and I think, and maybe I wasn't thinking of this exactly before, but I sort of feel like I'm a big fan. I'm not plant-based in any way, shape, or form in terms of like what I eat, but I really love vegan food.
Yeah.
Though I tend to walk away from things like vegan sausage, you know, that are trying to mimic sausage.
Absolutely.
Because I think I have a lot of plant-based friends who also do that, because it's like, A, not the same,
right?
You know, and B, we just, you know, the whole point was we're leaving, you know, we're giving that up.
Right.
And while I wouldn't say that those things don't have a role, I think it's interesting because, you know, something like tofu, for me, it's like, well, I want to appreciate it because it's tofu. I don't want to appreciate it because you tried to make it taste like chicken.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some similarities, you know, when you are saying, okay, not using alcohol here, do you really need it to be like alcohol? You know?
Right.
You know, do you need to make the tofu taste like chicken? Probably not.
Right.
You know, I mean, there may be a period in there when you're like really craving, you know, that thing that gin did or that thing that bourbon did.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to expand, maybe like a classics menu for something like that. You know, it's an easy offering and people are familiar with it. And so they want to come get it. But when we're talking about like keeping our base, like I'm not only interested in sober people, I'm interested in everybody. And I actually, you know, have people come up because we do. So if you're in the Crossroads, we share a space with the bar. It's the same counter, just goes around the corner and then there's kind of like a cutoff. So we get a lot of people looking for each other, right? So like I get people and they're looking and it's like, oh, bourbon essence. They're like, oh, I like a bourbon cocktail. Like, can I get the Pandora's box? That's our kind of darker sipper cocktail that uses our bourbon and red wine essence. And I'm like, well, I would love to give you the Pandora's box, but it's not bourbon. It's our bourbon essence. And often I'll have people who are interested and they're interested in trying that. And they see me opening the smoking box and they want whatever that is. They don't really care what it is. So,
yeah. Well, and you guys, I mean, even in small cocktail bars, those typically aren't the places, you know, the small six-seater speakeasy spots.
Yeah.
Like most people don't go there. I think there's different motivation for going there. I think it's sometimes people who drink less, you know, but who want more from whatever that experience was.
Right.
And I think they're probably very similar to the folks who the counter day bar really is going to like find its niche in. Like, because this is about having an experience around a beverage, you know, and the goal really isn't, you know, I don't think in either case to get drunk, you know.
Right. No.
But there's zero chance of doing that, you know, at the counter, which is the cool part, because it's like, oh, okay, well, I can try three things. Probably right. Not going to do that.
Right. Doing a tasting menu of six cocktails is possible.
Yeah. Without, you know.
And you can still drive home.
Yeah. Do you think that's kind of the reason why? Because we talked about why, you know, NA cocktails has become such a, I don't like to use the word trend because that implies it's you
gonna
know.
It's going
to
end. Yeah.
That it is of the moment. But what do you think? Why do you think NA cocktails have become such a thing with the younger generation? And have become like not only something that like is trendy and, you know, healthy in some cases, but also is like, you know, something people have real excitement about.
Yeah. That's an interesting question. I mean, I think it's a plethora of things. Whether we find that younger people's time is more limited or their social interactions have like more stress or pressure. They're, you know, they're looking for something that they can do at night and have that experience of being fun and young and dumb, and then go to work or school in the morning. You know, we don't, nobody I know in their 20s has a lot of time on their hands, surprisingly. So.
Yeah, that makes sense, because it's, you know, there is a feeling like, listen, I don't want to wake up hungover.
Right.
And I don't know why it took this new generation to kind of be like, what if we went out and drank but didn't get hungover the next right. day? Like, what yeah. if we enjoyed that's, all parts of the going out experience?
That's the perplexing part of all of this. Though I think that, you know, we could go on and talk about the baggage that comes with, you know, the various generations, you know, of folks. I mean, I think that the motivations for drinking and the lack of acceptance for things that are outside the norm in past. You know, I think we can look at it now and go, how did it take people so long? The reality is there was so much social pressure.
Yeah.
To drink and do what everybody else is doing.
Absolutely.
So much longer ago. I mean, and this is a much bigger deal. I mean, there was so much pressure, you know, to remain closeted if you were heterosexual. There were all this pressure to like just do what everybody else did, you know, to fit.
Well, and there was the straight edge movement. I think that was in the 90s.
Yeah. Totally.
Or like the early 2000s. And this feels like the straight edge movement, but without like the kind of forced aggro sense of the word.
And there were the us versus them sort of a thing.
Yeah, the straight edge movement had a real defensiveness about it that was like, well, you're not cool. Like, you're doing these things because you're trying to be cool. We're not like you. Whereas this just feels like it's like, man, what if we just cut out the stuff we don't like about going out? Right. Like, what if we cut out the stuff that everyone agrees is annoying? Like,
I feel like lazy feels aggressive, right?
That's true. Yeah,
there's always that point,
right? Because it's counterculture, right?
Yeah,
right.
And I think and it's the aggressive versus defensive. I think that maybe what is feels different this time.
Right.
You know, it doesn't, this feels aggressive in a good way of like, we have to carve a place out where it's
exactly.
Like the straight edge.
We're making space for choices. Yeah. It's not an automatic decision that you're going to
get. It's also inclusive.
Yeah.
And I think past movements like this have been very teetotally, like, drinking is bad. We hate drinking, right? Which makes a huge separation.
Yeah.
And now you may feel that way and you're entitled to feel that way. But most of the spaces that are being created, you know, are being created to accommodate everyone, and they're being inclusive as opposed to, oh, you must be sober to be here, or you must be a drunk to be here.
And offering that space for people who, like you were talking about, are somewhere in between. Is what allows us to kind of convert you, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, Ryan and myself both drink. We're not cold sober. So, but yeah, it's like you're talking about. Like, I'll go out and I'll have like, you know, three soda waters and two shots of Fernet.
Right. Right. No, and I really do think that there's a lot more people in that in-between space.
Yeah.
That can appreciate the reasons why you might not want to drink, you know, but also have no reason to not drink. You know, like, I don't have to cut myself off from drinking, but I choose to.
Right.
Put limits on what I do.
I'd love to know, what's it like working inside Crossroads Collective? It feels like such a unique space.
This is a unique space, definitely, for something like this.
Yeah, and like, it's like, I love Eastside. I'm going to be there a lot for the Milwaukee Film Festival. It'll come next month. But what is it like both working on, as we've reported over the years, like this rapidly changing space of the Eastside, but also the Crossroads Collective space, which in its own way is rapidly changing in so many
ways. Yeah, it definitely is. We're having a lot of new businesses coming in right now. And it's actually funny, in terms of talking about the Crossroads Collective, I've actually been there for about a year now, because I was working at the bar before I was working at the NA bar.
Oh, you probably saw me there. Yeah, was that the pharmacy bar or the hidden one? Yeah.
So yeah, that's actually
which is a great little.
I know each other. Yeah. It's because he worked at Discourse and I worked
right Discourse, which is right there. Exactly.
Yeah. Before.
Oh, that's perfect.
And so people do
I've
probably
been annoying
you
at that bar and, you in know, the past. Yeah.
Yeah.
And come over and it's like, hey, Zoe, I want my.
Yeah. It's definitely weird because it's all new. It's a new space that. You know, we put a lot of effort into creating and it's our booth and stuff. And I'm like, I'm adjusting to a new position in the Crossroads. Like, I was a bartender and now I'm in marketing meetings. So.
Right.
So that's fun. Yeah. I know everyone there. I know all of our regulars. So yeah, it's nice to have that sense of community.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you're right next to the best place in the city of Milwaukee, which is the Oriental Theater.
So. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I love movies.
I love the Oriental Theater. In some respects, like a food hall is the perfect place to like launch a concept. Like
yeah, this. Yeah. We always talk about how Crossroads and food halls are the perfect idea incubator, right? So we get the chance to try something out and there is a constant revolving door of different people coming in that we can try to bring on to our concept and show our concept to and have them try out our stuff. So we get a lot of different kinds of people doing that and we get a lot of experienced chefs and bartenders and management and businesses that we can bounce ideas off of. So right now we are thinking about doing our hours are 3 to 9 right now. So it's pretty limited. It's just in the afternoons. And that's been working well for us. But we're curious about doing like a Sunday brunch thing where we get a waffle maker and then we serve more like, I just made a mimosa, a blood orange mimosa. That's super good. And doing something like that. And it's really cool because we can ask Diabomb, who's in the hall, like for some pork belly for the waffles or, you know, talk to Alex at Egg and Flour and get something from him. And, you know, there's a lot of different people and creatives that we get to talk to about the experience and experience.
So it also becomes really, really collaborative.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm thinking back to, you know, you talked about creative process for this, and obviously that can go really deep and really crazy really fast. But I would also guess that not everybody is intrigued enough to want to go back, you know, to really recreate all the building blocks for a complex drink. Was there something that attracted you to that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of work and a lot of testing.
Yeah, I love it.
And I think you guys were solidly, literally, like, every day working on
stuff.
Because 2.5 months in the case of creating a concept might not seem that long, but knowing Ryan in particular, well, 2.5 months, it's like, no, this is really 2.5 months.
The actual testing for the menu, like, we had concepts built, but the actual, like, testing and refining all happened in 2 weeks. So it was me and Ryan in this unfinished space for like 12 to 16 hours every day. So for 2 weeks. And that's how we made this menu. So I'm really excited to get to have more time to experiment for our next menu too.
So what was it that like really, really drew you in, you know, and made you say, oh, I want to be a part of that?
Man, it's hard because I've only actually been bartending for like 2.5 years. I was a barista before that and I've been in food and beverage forever. But it's funny because like my path is like I said, I started at a dive bar and like then I moved up to like event management for them and like training people pretty quickly. And then I moved over to Nice Times and I was the lead bartender there and I got to like get a little more in depth because their cocktails were made in the kitchen and they made like guava and, you know, a little more stuff like that. And then I got a little background in classics and doing bespoke at the pharmacy bar. And so, like, I've just been, like, constantly moving and pushing myself to be able to have more creative expression and creative freedom with every move that I make. So to me, this was the perfect place to go. And I've also been trying to move away from those late night hours and away from that drinking culture. So this is, doing NA is something like I've dreamed about and thought about before. And so when Ryan asked me to do this last October, I was like, seriously? I was like, really? You're doing that? You're asking me to do that?
So, yeah. Yeah. That's fun. I mean, awesome. Because it is really, you know, and I do think that people who've been around in the food and beverage space and not necessarily just cocktails, I think you have to understand flavor.
Yeah.
And that goes all sorts of ways. I think cocktails are more like food. And maybe that's just my perspective in the world, but I feel
like
cocktails are way more like food than something, you know, like beer, which is also about flavor, but a lot about science, you know?
Right.
And not that the cocktails, you know, I think all of it has to do with science. But it's interesting because the level of adventurousness, you know.
Yeah, and I feel like
I don't think cocktails are limited. And I don't think food is limited by things. You know, there aren't rules.
Right.
Necessarily. You know, whereas beer is like, well, there are only so many things you can put in beer.
And I feel like
before it becomes something else.
The NA space is like the perfect amalgamation of like science and food and flavor all in one. Because I use food products in my cocktails. So like, you know, I was thinking about doing like an NA sake or like a drink with like jasmine rice in the top and upper portion and doing like a split layer drink or something like that. So like I'm working on developing a really good toasted jasmine rice milk right now, you know? So
oh, interesting.
There's all sorts of stuff. Like when I'm cooking at home, like I'm like a super avid home cook, which is like really helped me out with this because I'm like, oh, let's use gochujang. And Ryan's like, let's use amchur. And I'm like, awesome. And then for opening, he got me a Noma's fermentation guide. So I'm like, how can we use fermentation?
Awesome.
Like I'm really into aspics. He won't let me do an aspic cocktail. So aspic is like any kind of gelatinous thing, like agar-agar.
Aspics were very popular in like 50s and 60s. In the horrific age like, of aspicking things.
The jello molds.
Like ham in aspic was a big popular thing. And, you know,
baby shrimps and peas and like a jello mold.
It was the way they used to suspended food. I always felt like it was the way that people felt like they had to suspend food for viewing, you know, where you could like little peas and shrimp, like all floating in this.
It feels very like NASA, early NASA space age to be like, look, we can make food hover.
And
it's just like, there's just so like,
and they take that concept, take like aspics and baby shrimps and crazy jello molds and stuff. And then it's like, it's almost spring. It's almost summer. What if we did like a rectangular column in a Collins glass of a juiced watermelon aspic with some verjus rouge and some floating watermelon seeds? I don't know, something like that.
I feel like that's where, you know, like an aspic was the solution to being able, like aspics probably preceded Jell-O, but Jell-O was like, you know, the average person's aspic.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and then people started doing things with that, and then, you know, Jell-O shots were like
that gets to mom into talking about aspects.
Of course he will.
This was just okay. You wanted this. You played this. Like, you were like, all right, at the 46 minute mark, I'm gonna bring up aspects, and this is how. This is how I peer pressure him into letting me do
that. Okay. No, it's another aspect.
There is a lot of
situation
in the direction of menus and in cocktails. We're constantly like corrupting each other with good ideas. So, yeah.
What are some aspects you is on the to-do list? Are there any other things that you're like, all right, what? How far can we push this idea?
Oh, man.
And not have people boo us out of the
building? It's so funny because when we started working together, Ryan and I, he was like, just so you know, like, I'm going to push us hard. And so don't get discouraged when we have to do something really crazy. And then every
time we have to do it 35 times.
Let's do more. No, like, let's go harder than that. So I don't know. It's really fun. I'm having a super fun time right now. At Tippecanoe in Bayview. So, like, going and...
Oh, that...
We have a really cool relationship with them.
The herbal... The apothecary?
Yeah, the apothecary. So, like, I just...
There's a lot of Tippecanoe things in Bayview, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It lends a library.
True, sorry. Yes, the apothecary. But, like, you can go and, like, they have, like, a huge array of herbs, and, like, getting to know that is really cool, too, because we can, like... make our own teas, and those are really, there's cool gentle flavors and stronger flavors like echinacea or marshmallow root or hyssop or stuff like that. Like doing our house herbal tincture was something I was really excited to work on. It's in a few of our cocktails. It's mugwort, sage, and skullcap. We were basically like, I was like, nice. What if, like, I love chartreuse. Like, I'm a huge chartreuse guy. Like, if I could put that in every alcoholic cocktail, I would. So, like, finding flavors that were more herbal. Like, I just talked about Fernet or whatever. So.
And I was going to say, and it's not like you can go and look at what's in chartreuse.
Yeah, there's, like,
the recipe for chartreuse is A, not, let you know, like, purposefully kept under wraps.
Secret.
Possibly no one really has it. Who knows? And secondly, has, yeah, hundreds of things in it. So
yeah, but if we can use, like, a little bit of fennel and orange blossom water and our herbal tincture, then, you know, we can get some of those lighter floral and darker grassy and herbal notes that, you know, bring those complexities that we would like to see in chartreuse, and use a little bit of our acid blend of tartaric and malic acid to brighten that. Like, there's a lot. There's just so much fun.
Do you feel like in some ways, for instance, most things that we would consider to be, I'm losing the word, Amaro, like Amaro.
Yeah, I love Amaros.
Digestifs, aperitifs. All of those things began as medicine.
Yes. Right?
And they were infused into alcohol because that was an easy way to pull their qualities, you know, into something. But 90% of the time they were, you know, consumed as a medical thing, you know, to promote digestion, to, you know, settle a stomach, to do this, to do that. And eventually they made it into the cocktail world.
Right.
You know, and I think for a while there, everybody lost the whole purpose, you know, of maybe drinking Fernet after you eat,
right,
or, you know, and it became a bartender's shot. But you're kind of dealing with a somewhat similar venture here, only without the alcohol, you know, to infuse.
Totally. Well, right? I mean, we do use ethanol for some of our tinctures. So if you are totally, I need 0.000%, just let me know, and then I can use glycerin-based bitters instead and try to mimic some of those flavors. But we do use like a few dashes of ethanol-based bitters that we develop, but we are going to try to expand upon that. And like you said, it's like the ethanol is the best base for drawing out flavors, right? So, but we can use our rotary evaporator. That's that bulb that spins in the water bath and evaporates out the ethanol. We can tincture, then put that through there, remove that ethanol, and then rehydrate that with glycerin, and then have like a really strong glycerin bitters.
Yeah. Is that similar to the process by which they pull the alcohol out of wine? I'm not in on the science part of this.
Some for NA wines. Yeah, so
and the reason why I'm asking is because it doesn't work well for wine. So there are probably limits.
Yeah, so the higher the sugar content, the harder it is.
Okay.
So things like wine are harder to pull the alcohol out of. But there are
with brands, while maintaining the integrity of the the flavor profile.
Right.
I'm assuming.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
There are certain brands that use that evaporation process. And if you can do that, then it always preserves flavor better than if you were to start from something water-based and build up that flavor.
Sure.
Like we were talking about, like, starting from the beginning and having a million steps to build up complexities, it's hard work. And so certain brands are really good at that. In terms of wine, we use Proxies. They're by Acid Leagues. And that's like talking about shrubs too. Like Acid Leagues is a vinegar brand. They have like a ton of really good vinegars and shrubs. And they also do this line of Proxies, which is their NA wines. So it's got some of that aciticness.
Yes, which are not alcohol. Like they're not wine.
Right. No, they're not wine.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
They're just something delicious.
In fact, they're probably my favorite NA wine products because they're very, very much like NA cocktails in that they serve as a substitute for wine.
Yeah.
Because they'll pair with things like wine does, but they don't aspire to being wine.
Right, right. They're something of themselves, and they do what they're good at, right? They're not trying to do something they're not good at.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of why I asked about the, you know, because most not NA wines are made and then de-alcoholized. And I know there's a term for that I'm somehow not thinking about.
I honestly think that's it. I don't think.
Alcohol removed. And I guess the way we refer to them is alcohol removed wine.
Yeah.
And those almost never work. And I think it really is like you probably set on that because of the sugar content.
Right.
So things like the proxies, like, have been my favorites. Like, and I haven't tasted everything NA, but.
Yeah, they're really
like,
good.
No, it's like, I would rather you didn't try to be wine.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't be something you're not, is what we're learning here today.
Right. Don't be something you're not, be what you are, and do what you're good at.
Yeah, just be something delicious. Just be something delicious. Yeah. I don't know, and I feel like that's like the constant struggle in this whole space. It's like, just be delicious, you know? Don't try to be something else.
So speaking of delicious things, so your opening menu is Myths and Fables, you said. And so without spoiling anything too much, you know, what's next for you guys? How long is each menu going to stay? And do you already have ideas in place for the next kind of themed menu?
Yeah, so this one will only be around for like a few more months, less than 3 months. So we were intending to do in trimesters. We might switch to importers because, like we talked about, a lot of the people who come to us for our tastings are experience seekers. They're people who are just like looking for a really in-depth and cool experience. So changing it up a little more frequently allows us to provide that for them again and again. But yeah, so if you want to taste myths and fables, then get over there quick.
Well, and then I should get to the most important question I ask every podcast. Where can people find the Counter Day Bar, both online and in?
Oh, yeah. At the Counter Day Bar on Instagram, thecounterdaybar.com. You can book reservations with us and look at some of our wonderful photography of our cocktails. And then 2238 North Farwell in the Crossroads Collective is where we are located.
Hey, Phil, I'll say this, film festival's coming up, and if you need an excuse to go next door and hang out at the Counter Day Bar.
Stop by for one.
And you totally need an excuse. Stop by for a drink. It won't make you want to sleep through the movie. Right. I mean, honestly, because like...
And for those night movies especially, because it's lethal to go to like one of the 11 o'clock like Hooligante movies, and then like 15 minutes in, you're like, oh no. Those two beers with dinner were a mistake.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not gonna see how this movie ends, am I?
Well, and I feel like the Counter Day Bar is the perfectly named venue for me because I am a terrible day drinker. Like I love like going out for brunch and having a Bloody Mary, but honestly, one Bloody Mary makes me want to nap all afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, well, and it's probably combined with, you know, brunch, which is typically, you know, too much or too much.
I just feel that about anything. Like, I don't have to eat anything or drink anything to want to nap in the middle of the day.
Well, I do like
one of the great
nap,
things that came from the pandemic was, you know, new respect for naps.
So
I feel like during the pandemic, everyone was like, why don't we allow naps again? Like, naps are great.
Yeah, because America has never allowed naps. You know.
Yeah.
We're all too busy.
Yeah, if you're looking to stop by for one without getting sleepy, we're happy to walk you through the menu and provide service. And if you're just looking for a beer, then we've got really good beers too. We got everything you can ask for. So come to us at any time of the day and catch me doing prep before 3 p.m. and talk to me one-on-one too. So.
I like the people aspect of this as well. Like, you know, that you can really get in there and I get the behind the scenes.
Yes. I mean, like, if you want to talk to me, I'm there 5 days a week. So come talk to me about this stuff. I love talking about it, right? I'm pushing this.
I've been real mellow this episode. Yeah, the enthusiasm. I just expected a little bit more. Yeah, just not much.
She works with Ryan. Come on.
Ryan.
Listen, I know. Yeah. This has been...
Okay,
you can ask her about Aspic.
Yeah.
Before the episode, he's like, I know that and keep your sentences pretty short and curt compared to me, so make sure that you know what you're saying. And it's like, I'm like rambling.
There we go.
Yeah, the rabbit's paw folded and it was like, yeah, she's going long on Aspic.
That's okay.
Well, but thank you so much chatting with Munt about the counter day bar.
And thank you for what you're doing, you know, and overall.
Yes.
Because I really like... Like, we need people putting thought into these things, you know, to make experiences really worth.
Yeah, whether
you're, you know, worthwhile.
Sober or a drinker or just want a break or a drink on a Wednesday evening, come by us, give us a try. I promise we'll make it worth your while. So.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Let's call it a podcast. An awesome conversation, an intoxicating one, if you will, even though we're talking NA cocktails.
Yeah, the conversation itself was intoxicating, not the beverages. Right.
And I truly must say, definitely check out the Counter Day Bar anytime, but definitely check it out during the Milwaukee Film Festival. The Milwaukee Film Festival is such a great opportunity not only to see movies, but also to check out the neighborhood and check out places that in these neighborhoods that you haven't been to at the Times and the Avalon and the Oriental. So make sure to check out, grab dinner, grab a drink.
I feel like the Film Festival is a great way to head to places for a drink or for dinner or for lunch or
it's a brilliant excuse to go to places that have been on your to-do list
that you haven't been or that you haven't been for a while,
which I'm gonna do. I'm gonna check out some places on the east side that I haven't eaten or drank at yet, because trust me, be at the Milwaukee Film Festival, you're gonna run into me and make sure to say hi or don't. It's fine. I understand. I'm a big old weirdo.
I wonder if I went to as much stuff as you at the film festival, then I'd probably run into you.
I think you'd probably find me at some point, no matter how much you go, because I am everywhere.
Because you could very well schedule yourself like completely opposite.
You could, but why would you do that? I mean, you should. Like, it's probably wise to schedule yourself as far away from me as possible, because I'm weird anyway.
What, you talk through the movies?
Never.
Butter to yourself?
I would never
butter. Well, see,
during a
movie. Then you'd be great.
I'm a respectful moviegoer. Who do you think I am? An amateur? Lori, where can people find?
No, I'm just saying. I'm circumvent. I'm telling you why you would probably be a person that people would want to meet on the way, because you're respectful of the movie situation.
That's true. That is how I am going to die, being respectful of a movie situation. Can people find more of the Food Crush podcast?
you can also find Food Crush on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Food Crush Pod. And you might even get more than just podcasts if you would give us a follow.
Yeah.
There. And where can people find?
You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And yeah, Lori, did you say where people can find you?
I did not.
Yeah.
You can find me at Lo Frederick on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well.
Well, thank you to our producers. Thank you to our awesome guest. Thank you to Lori, my co-host. And as always, most importantly of all, thank you to the listeners. Thank you for giving our voices some ears to go to. So have a great one, everybody. And as always, keep cooking.